May it please the court. Counsel. Again, Andrea Smith on behalf of the appellant DeAndra Chambers here. And Mr. Chambers is not making an easy request today, I realize. In effect, Mr. Chambers in this appeal is asking this court to overrule its decisions and its categorical approach to whether the crime of escape is considered categorically a crime of violence. Under
Have you made any effort to investigate how often violence is associated with people who don't report, as opposed to escapers?
No, Your Honor, I haven't. In fact, I think that's one of the points that Judge Rovner...
In order to argue for overruling Bryant?
I think that's one of the points that Judge Rovner pointed out in the Golden opinion that...
So have you made any effort to substantiate Judge Rovner's concern, right?
No, Your Honor, and nor have I made an effort, and I'm not sure the statistics would be out there for whether violence arises when someone's being stopped for shoplifting.
Statistics, how can Judge Rovner's concerns be verified or refuted?
Well, moving to what Judge Williams said in her dissent in the Golden Opinion, she talks about the possibility of someone being arrested for shoplifting also being a circumstance that could give rise to violence. And for that matter, a traffic stop.
That would be a better case for you.
I apologize, sir?
That would be a better case for you.
Of course it would, but the problem with the categorical approach here is it does not comport with the United States Supreme Court decision in Shepard in terms of the analysis that the Shepard Court did in 2005 of the Massachusetts statute on burglary. And the Supreme Court looked at the Massachusetts statute on burglary and decided that it was a divisible statute, and a statute, a crime is divisible if it can be a crime of violence under one set of facts and one violation of that statute, and it can be not a crime of violence under another set of facts under that same statute. And that's exactly what we have here. In fact, the Illinois crime of escape, the statute crime of escape, has even an inclusion of, as part of the Illinois crime of escape, someone who knowingly fails to abide by the terms of home confinement. And that's so far afield of any kind of crime and violence that was intended by Congress when Congress said that one of the three predicate felonies for the 15-year mandatory minimum for the armed career criminal statute.
The problem is we just don't know whether there's violence associated with these no-shows. So has the Sentencing Commission studied this issue?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor, no. But, of course, this is a statutory definition that Congress passed, and so I'm not sure if the Sentencing Commission could rule on, you know, the 924E definition of what a crime of violence is. I think Judge Williams had it exactly right when she said, when Congress said, is there a serious risk of physical injury to a person if it's not one of the listed crimes? And Judge Williams, in her dissent to the Golden opinion just in October, a couple months ago, said, arresting a shoplifter, is there a serious risk of physical injury to the guard in a Walmart store who goes and tries to arrest a shoplifter? No, it's not a serious possibility. There's always the possibility, but there's not the serious probability of that happening. And for that matter, a traffic stop. I mean, the bottom line is, if you look at what Congress intended...
That's not a good argument, because then everything unravels, right? You can have someone who's sentenced to... he's the shoplifter, okay? So the shoplifter is sent to a low minimum security jail, and he works outside on a farm, and there's no supervision, and he wanders off, right? So...
And yes, sir, the crime there, when we're talking about the predicate...
Then your argument would be either you want to examine each case or you want to use these hypotheticals to say that escape is not a crime of violence.
the categorical approach to saying all escapes are crimes of violence does not comport with what Congress intended when it said a crime of violence is one of the three predicate felonies for an armed career criminal mandatory 15-year sentence. When Congress said specifically in the statute, the serious risk of physical injury to another. So when you have a categorical...
What if someone holds up a bank with a fake gun? Is that a crime of violence?
Your Honor, if you're... That's not... I'm talking about the categorical approach to escape now. We could go off in many hypotheticals. I'm trying to look at, as Judge Williams did in the Golden dissent, what did Congress intend when it required, when it passed the definition of a crime of violence? Arson, extortion, burglary, or explosives, or the serious physical, the serious possibility of physical injury to another party. And, of course, I think the case law has said that when a bank robber robs a bank with a fake gun, someone could still be hurt because the guard might pull his gun out and shoot somebody and might miss the robber and might shoot an innocent person standing in the bank. So I think the case law has said that that is a crime of violence even when there is a fake gun. But my point is when we go back and look at what Congress intended...
Well, the problem is that all these state laws are bunched together. Escape is a very broad term under state law, and it includes these failures to report, which I would think my experience is generally doesn't seem like a crime of violence to me.
And I think this court should take the high ground and look at this again, particularly given the analysis of the Shepherd opinion.
Well, but we usually don't overrule cases that are as fresh as Bryant.
Well, this court...
Golden, right?
Yes, in October, and Golden in October, and that was just a couple of months ago. But I think,
well,
this court.
Hard. I mean, so we have the two decisions, and one of them is just 2 months old. It's a little hard for us to say that because we disagree, we're going to overrule those decisions, right?
I think if this court took a hard look at the case law that developed up to the point of the Golden decision, which was just following.
Affirm, and then you can ask for en banc review or something.
And I'm sure that'll probably happen in this case. But I think
if we would have to, under our rules, if we wanted to reverse previous decision, we would have to ask the full court whether it wanted to hear the case.
And I understand that. And I understand the procedure could start with this panel if this court thought about it and looked at it, because I think there's been some travesty of justice in the past when people are given 15 years mandatory minimum sentences based on knowingly failing to abide by the terms of their home confinement, which is included as one of the possibilities of violating the Illinois escape.
He has a bad record apart from that, and he is a violent person, so maybe people like that, they don't show up and you have to go after them. Maybe that is a dangerous situation.
But, Your Honor, if I may address that, and I'm seeing I'm running into my time here. Of course, the three predicate felonies for an armed career criminal, they don't have to be crimes of violence. They could be mere sales of drugs on the street.
You can't have it both ways. You can't say we should treat this case by case and then keep harping on your shoplifter.
No, I'm not. I'm saying it should be treated like the Supreme Court did in Shepherd, which was... When a state statute is divisible, we can look at it. And then there's a limited amount of information we can look at.
I don't understand. What do you mean divisible? Is it divisible into every single case, or you want to divide escapes from failures to show up?
As you know, Your Honor, you've read the Shepherd opinion. I'm sure of it.
No,
they said we can look at the
statute. What do you want? Do you want case by case or what?
I think it's real clear if you end up getting it. Someone has an escape conviction.
You want to go case by case and make an assessment? The district judge makes an assessment in a situation like this, this type of person and so on, who doesn't show up. Is there a likelihood of violence? Is that what you want? Or do you want to classify all no-shows as not crimes of violence?
No, I think you can do what the Supreme Court said in Shepherd. You look at the information, the charging documents.
Don't harp on Shepherd. Just tell me what your answer to my question is.
In this case with Mr. Shame Chambers? Is that your question, sir?
I'm asking you, do you want case-by-case assessment, Or do you want to carve out the no-shows from the other escapes?
No carving out, because there might...
Well, if you want to look at this case, then forget about shoplifters, because this guy is not a shoplifter.
All right, failure to report for incarceration does not pose a serious risk of injury to another. And I think the information...
Categorically or case by case now?
I think Shepard did not take a categorical approach.
I wouldn't mention Shepard, but just answer my question so I know what your position is.
I think this court is bound to comply with the Supreme Court directives in terms of...
I am asking you what your position is, and then we'll decide whether Shepard supports your position.
So
I still can't figure out whether you want us to look at the facts of the individual case or carve out from the escape category no shows.
All right, Your Honor, if you're asking that question, it's not one that I had pondered before, but I think that would probably be a very safe bet to say that the no-shows are not fraught with a serious risk of physical injury to another, and that could be a categorical approach to in terms of those persons charged and convicted under the Illinois statute in that ground.
Okay.
And that's not...
Thank you.
Thank you. I see I've even gone beyond my rebuttal time. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Mr. Leggins?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tom Leggins, and I was not the attorney below, although I am familiar with the record. The argument I have to make to you this morning is not at all nuanced and not at all verbose.
But I also think it's pretty absurd.
The argument I'm about to make?
We do have these cases, but I share Judge Evans' intuition that, of course, escaping from a prison is violent and fraught with violence. But just you don't show up, I don't know, maybe there are violent incidents. You don't suggest there are. I take it the Sentencing Commission has not studied this issue?
I'm not aware of...
Has anybody?
I'm not aware of that. Either, Your Honor.
Do you have any cases where people were, prosecuted because they committed violent acts connected with not reporting?
The
marshals went after them and they took hostages or something and say, I will not report to my halfway house. I can't stand it, right?
Your Honor, certainly there's nothing in this record to that effect. I'm sure that if this court were to impose that requirement, there would be anecdotal evidence presented.
Not that it'd be anecdotal. You could look at prosecutions. I mean, we have a lot of data about prosecutions and what events they arose out of. So why does it have to be left to kind of the fiction that an escape is an escape?
I believe, in response to your first question, I don't know that there is that much statistical evidence on these kind of issues state to state, and this was a state escape conviction. I guess one of the bottom line response that you can make is that the part of the rationale for adopting a categorical approach is that it's going to promote efficiency and uniformity in its own way. And now,
why wouldn't it be just as rational to carve, as Ms. Smith suggested? Why not just carve out the no-shows and say, we don't have any reason to think or any evidence that the no-shows are dangerous?
I don't think I could argue that would be irrational, but I don't believe that the choice that has been made here is irrational either.
Well, the U.S. attorney doesn't have to push for something like this either.
Yes, you have to file.
I mean, you could look at this and say, well, this is a failure to report. That's really not the kind of escape when we think of escape. Steve McQueen jumping over the fence or something, getting on a motorcycle. This is not that sort of situation. So we're not going to push for one of these to be one of the predicate prior felonies.
I don't think I would agree with that, Your Honor. I believe once...
Well,
Wait a minute. If you don't report, you're supposed to report at 4 o'clock to start serving a sentence, mm-hmm. or return to your halfway house if you're on work release or something like that, and you come in an hour later, that you've violated that statute, haven't you?
That is correct, Judge.
And you could be charged, and you have no defense, and you get convicted of it. And now you have a prior violent felony on your record. If you do that three times, you got three violent felonies on your record. Now you're an armed career criminal? Doesn't make any sense to me.
I guess this plays back into your original question. Would we nevertheless have the discretion to forego that? You know, I'm not sure that, and given my 15 or 16 years of experience, the way U.S. attorneys' offices work, this court has provided the law that says a failure to report qualifies you as a crime of violence.
Wait, you have the discretion not even to prosecute cases.
Sure.
Right?
We
so
have
why
that
don't
discretion.
You have the discretion not to push for an enhancement if one of the underlying defenses is as shaky as this one is?
Well, for one, I would not agree with the assessment that it's as shaky. What was done in this case was done in light of precedents that have been established by this court. And once this court takes a categorical approach, consistency requires us to take a categorical approach.
No, that's wrong. Because you have limited resources. You have to allocate your resources sensibly. You can't just automatically, because I mean, obviously, if you say you're going to push someone for this additional, you know, sentence, well, that may, you know, cause them to go to trial or something like that, and it might be wasteful on your part. So there's no duty to enforce criminal law to the hilt, right? And that's why we have prosecutorial discretion.
And I didn't suggest that
if someone tried to take away your prosecutorial discretion, you would fight like mad.
Correct.
Well, you can't have it both ways and tell us, you know, you're bound. If we say something is categorical, then you have to charge him with an armed career criminal offense.
I think once the decision is made to charge, which is within our discretion, then fairness to other defendants requires us to treat everyone the same.
But you don't treat everyone the same. Person cooperates with you, could be a big drug dealer. You ask for a tremendous discount, so he gets punished much less severely than a small fry. You do that all the time. How is that fair to?
Because that person is not similarly situated to other defendants.
No, he's the worst criminal. Therefore, he knows more. Therefore, he can turn over a lot of small fry, and you can say, "Oh well, we had 20 convictions out of this drug investigation."
And I
let the big shot get away. Right?
And again, I guess that goes back to your original question of prosecutorial discretion, but once. And we should be treating similarly situated people the same on the basis of the same factors. And all I'm saying in this case is that once you charge someone with being a felon in possession, and if this court has established the precedent that failure to report constitutes a crime of violence, then in my mind, fairness dictates that absent any other countervailing considerations, prosecutorial considerations, then everyone who is subject to that enhancement should get it.
But isn't it kind of absurd that these cases should be decided without any inquiry into the underlying empirical reality? What would be easier than to pull the files of, you know, the last 100 people in Illinois who have been arrested for failure to show up and see whether there was any violence connected with any of them?
I guess that would be...
It's simple. Then you'd have some sense of whether in Illinois there, and you could compare it with people who actually escaped from prison, and see whether there's a difference. Then you could carve out this subcategory of no-shows.
And
wouldn't that be the sensible way to proceed?
I don't, again, and it goes back to the rationality. I don't know that the categorical approach is irrational.
No, it is irrational. Suppose it turns out there's never any violence associated with these no-shows. It's just like what Judge Evans says. The person is late, or he makes a mistake, you know, he thought it was a different date, or he didn't think it mattered, he could show up a day late. He's going to go to prison for many years, so he figures, what's another day? So if there's no history, if there's no violence associated with it, then to treat it as a crime of violence would be quite goofy, wouldn't it?
If those set of facts were to come
to
pass.
All we need is to investigate, and then we'll know, or you'll know, and find out whether there is a risk of violence associated with this particular conduct.
And again, while I agree that approach would not be irrational, the categorical approach.
How about just sticking your head in the sands? Is that rational?
It can be if it serves other rational interests, and I'm not suggesting that
Fitch is rational,
and I'm not suggesting that that's what's going on here. But
well, it is. You're not very responsive to my suggestion that you study this issue.
I guess that's because, again, the standard this court has set forth is a categorical approach, which, frankly, is beneficial to the United States. And as long as we have the categorical approach, then I don't think you're going to see a representative of the United States be real receptive to anything else. And I hope that's rational. And I say
okay.
I'm out of time, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Legan. So, Ms. Smith, do you have anything further?
Thank you. May I ask all the questions that need to be asked? I appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not?
Public defenders.
Well, you're a defender. Well, we thank the defenders for your efforts on behalf of your